And I just hit the record button. This is Eddie checking in.
This is Gage checking in.
And this is Two Boys in a Podcast.
Today we're going to be talking about graduation, flipping things, kids, and also humbling experiences. And of course, wrapping up with where we are in our lives, what we're doing. So I guess top of the list is graduation. I was just telling Eddie that... I was in class and someone was talking to me about how close I am to grad, like how close this semester's end is coming, because I'm actually graduating a semester early, which we talked about in previous episodes. But yeah, 6 weeks. 6 weeks from now, like from today when we're recording this, I will have a degree. I'll have be a graduate. There's so many different ways to say this. Like, I will have finished my higher education. Finished my education in general. Like, I'll never have to write an essay again.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
It's a weird feeling. It's very, like, I'm on the cusp. This is like a watershed moment. And this is gonna be like true independence. It's weird. I don't know how to feel. And then I guess we're gonna get into that later on about different milestones in our life. But yeah, right now, this is like the new frontier.
For me, when I graduated, it's pretty hype, I would say. It's a lot of stress towards the end because, fun fact, am I peeking?
No, it's okay. I'm just taking a look at it because it went dark.
Oh, okay. Are the batteries good too?
Batteries are okay. Good. This time we're...
Batteries are go. Thunderbird is go.
Batteries are go. And this time I put it on stereo. This is in baseball for just a hot second. But so when you hear the episode, I'm going to be coming out of the left mic and you're going to be coming out of the right.
Oh, that's why I was hearing one of us more on the other side of the headphone.
So sorry for people who like to keep one bud in when they're in class. And yeah, like listening to this. Maybe I'll mono mix. I don't know. Whoa. But it pans generally because my voice travels to your side and your kind of...
Yeah.
But it blends a little bit. So anyways, sorry. Yeah, anyways. In baseball.
So, when I was graduating back in, I want to say 2015. Yeah, so 2015 I was graduating and I was in my last semester of college. And it was pretty stressful because you're doing things like thesis and I'm finishing up all my extracurricular classes that I still need credits to in order to graduate. I actually almost failed my online class because I suck at online classes. And I passed it with a D. I think I passed it with a 63. It was really close.
Shaved.
Yeah.
Shaving that margin.
So it was scary, but I remember when I handed my last assignment in because I was already done with thesis. I was done with thesis presentations. And I handed in that final online, you know, assignment, and I was like, there it is, I graduated. And I calculated how much of a grade I needed, so yeah. I was like, how much can I half-ass this, but still make it good enough so I know I pass. So
yeah, because ultimately when you graduate, what they don't tell you going into college is it's pass-fail.
Yep.
No matter how good your grades are, unless you go to grad school, but even then there's some going into college, it's pass-fail, because you either get the paper or you don't get the paper.
Yeah.
You either get that degree or you don't get the degree. You either graduate or you don't graduate. Just like high school, you know. Mm-hmm. But high school is going into undergraduate. They care about your grades. They're mm-hmm. looking at, you know, junior year. They're like, you got to really try. Really try this junior year because this is what they really look at. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you get senioritis and then, you know, whatever. You coast and whatever. But it's just such a strange feeling to know that I'll never... Like, with your assignment thing, you're like, how much can I half-ass this? Because, like... I don't know, unless you're a nerd. Like, you don't like nobody likes writing paper.
Nerd.
Yeah, like, nobody likes writing papers.
Yeah.
Shit's so boring. Like, it's not how I... For some people, maybe they prefer writing essays. Yeah. Like, I don't know, maybe if you're, like, a journalist or something and you like writing these articles and these pieces.
Yeah, but that's different.
For me, I will take video assignment if, like, a teacher's like, oh, and you can do a video assignment or a presentation. I'll always take that over a paper any day of the week.
So, that's interesting when you say that. It's because when I was in grad school for the time I was in there, and one of my classes, our Studio B class, so we have three... In the BAC, there's structured curriculums, like blocked curriculums, so tier 1, 2, and 3. So when I got in, I had a whole bunch of transfer credits, so I pretty much knocked out tier 1 and went straight into tier 2.
Mm-hmm.
Each tier has a studio class, like a major core studio class. Mm-hmm. So I was in studio class B. And in studio class B, our teacher was giving us assignments and making us do, like, a whole bunch of case studies that, in my opinion, I didn't think we needed to do. And everybody else was complaining about it in class. So it wasn't just a me thing. It was an everybody thing. And he gave us this one assignment that was, honest to God, really stupid because everybody knew how to do it. And there was really no point of trying to prove that we could. It's just one of those no-brainers. And I sent up a really long email, and I included our dean in it too, or department head. And I was like, why this is, you talk about how little time we have to do this, yet you make us do all these pointless stuff. And then you wonder why we don't get our work done. And when I told everybody that in class, they were like, dude, we fucking love you for saying this. But ultimately actually ended working out for the next semester's favor because they tweaked the curriculum. And so they omitted certain things that people had to do for that class. So in a way, it wasn't, you know, devaluing the what you would be learning, but at the same time, you're not doing things that are not critical to learn in class, but while at the same time, you're still, you know, learning what you need to learn. So, things like that.
Sorry, I just got distracted a little bit because I just realized for the week that I'm taking off next week, I thought I was not going to have anything to do for classes. I was willing to, like, pass up classes, and I just realized I have, like, a midterm exam that is in the middle of that week.
Dun, dun, dun.
And I'm so prepared for the test, and I can totally just do it, but I'm trying to rack my head about ways I can do this test while still being in New York.
Yeah.
Fuck. I have to send an email after the show. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I think another big thing, too, is with graduation, so getting my undergrad degree, after you pretty much when you finish your classes and you know you're gonna pass, so that's a really comforting thing. You kind of just jump into graduation. There's really for me, at least, for going to such a small college, it was make sure you know order your gown and apron, and if you're honors, make sure you like include this. It was just getting that. And then here's the graduation date. How many tickets do you need? Okay, if you need any more tickets, go to a registrar and they can give you more. And then just graduation comes. And then you get there. We were in a hall. We all kind of grouped together. Everybody was, and at least for ours, we were all separated by major. And there was only like three of us for interior design. And so with that, they were just like, this is what you're going to do. You're going to be called up by row. They'll say your name. You pick it up, and then you're done. And then, yeah, that's really what it is. It was really weird. It felt almost, when I got my degree, I was like, this is it. That's all. You know, it doesn't feel, I don't know, at least for me, it didn't feel as such a happy-go-lucky feeling. Like, holy shit, like, you know, I think I really appreciated, like, completing a pretty big milestone in my life, saying that, you know, I completed college. I finished something big.
Yeah.
You know, not a lot of people in my family can say that they went to college and got a degree and whatnot. But I guess, you know, in today's climate of criticizing whether or not it's good to go to college or not now, you know, what I know now, would I still feel the same about going to college or wanting to go to college? And it was really funny because my youngest brother, he's in that time. He's a senior in high school and he knows he doesn't want to go to college. And I think that's from the few years he's seen me and my older brother in college. And not to say that we're always stressed, but at the same time, he could see that there were times that we just felt like we were like, what the fuck is going on? You know, we're spending all this money, we're going through all this stress, you know, they're telling us, oh, do this and you'll get this. But then I hear stories from people who graduate and then 5 years down the road, they're not even doing what they want, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of sad. I mean, I think about that all the time. Like, if I could do it again, is it worth it? And obviously, I'm not at the very end of that. I don't have the paper in my hand. But I already know for right now, it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I was self-aware enough when I was leaving high school to know what I wanted to do, it would have saved me a lot of time and money. I wasn't that self-aware, and so I went through this journey. I'm still going through it, but I know that I can pay off my debts. I just wish I didn't have to, you know, like walking around with a weighted vest. I'd rather just not have that vest on.
Yeah, I told my brother too. I told him the biggest advantage that he has over me and my brother is that he has no debt. I told him, and I was like, in comparison, I told him in a way of being free. I was like, you have the most freedom out of any of us right now.
Yeah. And like, with the burgeoning of like online classes and other things like masterclass for creatives like myself, or even just like technical colleges, if you want to like get a higher paying job but don't necessarily want to put so much like, I guess it's diminishing to say thought into it, but like for HVAC or like welding, or you know, to get licensed and to get permitted for the certain tasks that you can do that get you a bump in income from like their basic entry level stuff by just taking up a couple classes that make be a couple hundred dollars. Like if it's, you really care about the money, there's ways that you can just work trade jobs, make a fair living, and still have time to do your own thing on the side.
Yeah.
And if I could do it over again, I wouldn't go to college.
No. Yeah.
But saying that, if I went back in time and looked at myself and at my high school self and said, Gage, don't go to college, he wouldn't have listened. Like, you don't understand. It's like, I'm literally you. It's like,
no, I am you. Just
hold it. It's like that meme with the girl where she's like, guys will literally only, or no, she's like, oh, I wish I could have this guy. And then he's like, oh, he's like, hey, want to go out? And it's like that guy. And he's like, ew, disgusting, get off. He's like, I'm literally that guy. like, oh man, I just want the answers to my future. Gage, don't go to college. I don't want to listen to you. I'm you, dude, but from the future. Like, I wouldn't listen to myself because I was wholeheartedly convinced I was going to become a therapist.
Yeah. I was wholeheartedly convinced, or I think that's something what we'll get into later is about being humble.
Yeah.
Is I was overhyped around my family about going to college to make sure you get a good education. And I feel like one thing with, it's different for, you know, kids who are raised by, you know, when their parents are immigrants, you know, being the son of immigrant parents and seeing how much they have to work for what they have now without going to college. I mean, my mom went to college, but she never completed a degree other than an associate's in just general studies. But even then, you know, my mom or my parents just kind of instilling the trope of if you go to college, you'll have a better life.
Yeah, it's the American dream.
Yeah, it is, but it's not necessarily true. And I guess it's only really only focused on certain majors, kind of like guaranteed majors.
Engineering, STEM.
Yeah, engineering, if you want to go into the sciences.
Lawyers, doctors.
Yeah, those type of things, those are almost guaranteed that you're gonna make a lot of money. But even then, there are some doctors who do a lot of pro bono work, or lawyers who do a lot of pro bono work, or just do the free clinic and very kind of like, you know, civil duty type.
But that's after they pay off the big bucks, because it's gonna cost a lot of money to go to law and med school and
engineering. I mean, some people take a big ass gamble and just go into the jump of it.
Yeah.
But that's what they want to do.
Well, there's like the expectation. But I feel like the sentiment is going to shift when the repercussions and the rippling effects of families that are started with two partners being college graduates with debt going into like having children. And I'm sure that's already a thing now, but particularly in our generation, and we'll get that into that later, about having kids, when we have families that are built off of a couple that is already in debt when it comes to student loans, and seeing how that affects the family dynamic, seeing how that affects their future plans, and when they have kids, and maybe how long they've waited to have kids because they couldn't shake the debt, or to start families, however they see that. I think we're going to see a shift away from, I'm the proud statement of, I'm the first kid to go to college in my family, to being, I'm the first kid to not take on the debt. You know, to like realize I don't need to go to college because there are some things you have to go to college for, lawyer, doctor, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are some things you shouldn't, or at least wait, you know, like you're kind of primed your whole educational life to go grade to grade to grade to grade to grade to grade to grade without skipping anything, yeah. without taking any breaks, barring any like health reasons that you need to take a break off of school.
Yeah.
So even though they tell you you can take a gap year in college, you see all your buddies and all your friends going off to college and you want to do the same. So as much as they tell you that you have an option, like, oh, you could totally just wait, they don't advise you to wait. They just tell you to jump into
just
it.
Just go.
Yeah, just go. Hey, you look, you just graduated.
It's going to look good for our school.
Yeah. You just graduated. Stats. You don't have a job. You've never filled out a 1040. Go take on some debt.
Yeah.
Like, people should be... I mean, stop... We shouldn't be relying so much on the loans, you know? Like, whatever happened to, like, saving up money to go to college, you mm-hmm. know? Now people, because the loans are there, they're like, well, they're going to give me money up front. I'll learn it later.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm going to be a, you know... gender studies major. Obviously, I'll be back. I'll be like giant professor. Yeah, I'll be the most world renowned.
I'll get a major for, you know, learning how to look at thermometers.
Dude, underwater basket weaving. Like, it's a burgeoning market in Taiwan. Like, I'm going to be huge. And then they flop. And it's really depressing because
it is one of those things.
It squanders your dreams.
Yeah, it's kind of a snowball effect because, like, you get this debt. And then now you're expected to get a job that pays a lot so you can pay off this debt, but you don't get a good job. So now you're in this perpetual, like, cycle of, okay, I have an okay paying job that's not exactly what I want to do, but it's kind of paying off the debt, but the interest is packing on at a rate that I can't pay it off at a fast, you know, fast enough rate if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And it just keeps cycling.
And like, this argument's been beat to death. Like,
I'm sick and tired of hearing people talk about statistics of saying, well, people who go to college make 50K more than the average person.
Okay. I took enough of AP statistics, even though I got a 3 on the test, for anyone who cares, to know that you can manipulate statistics however the fuck you want to make it seem like your agenda is the right one.
Yeah.
Because you deal with medians or averages, or you deal with, like, you just deal with different numbers to get the rate that you want. Because you can, you know, use your clever speech to convince people of a certain thing while still being true. It's misleading.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens a lot, especially with college statistics.
Yeah.
And colleges specifically when they're advertising to students.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's a choice. So I don't feel too bad for these kids, and I don't feel too bad for myself or too bad for anybody, because it's like, you ultimately made the choice.
Yeah.
As much as it's like, yeah, but what they didn't tell me, it's like, dude, you're an adult now. You turn 18, like, you've got to make those decisions, man.
Yeah, it's our life, and we chose what to do with it. I feel super bad for anybody who had to go to college and, you know, were practically forced by their parents or really forced by their community to go. Because when I was in high school, you know, there were a few people who didn't want to go to college, and like, every, you know, they're being fucking ostracized, if that's even the right word to use.
That's probably proper.
Because they don't want to go to college. It was like, well, what if I just want to do this instead, or chill, or take a leap year to travel and go see the world?
While you don't have debt, like, God
damn it.
If I could rewind that clock, dude, I think about that. Think about the bills that you're paying right now.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how much of your income is going back into paying off loans
that you don't want to even pay.
For times when you had to maybe, you know, skip class, you could take on another shift to pay off the loans that you're, you know what I mean? Or not saying that to that extreme of an effect, but you're having to crunch your time, you know? You're paying off things. I'm paying off things currently. I'm paying off my own time right now as we speak. You know what I mean? Like, this time that we're talking right now, I could be... You know, I mean, it's pretty late, but I could be working at the movie theater, you know, but I just decided to take Saturdays off for myself. I had to make that a decision. I had to sit down with myself and say, Gage, do you want this Saturday to yourself? Yes, I think it would help my, you know, mental well-being and, like, give myself time for homework, whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not even able to, like, it's not even a free ride, you know, even though I'm taking on all this debt, like, I'm not even able to enjoy the time that I'm using the debt to pay for, you know? So it's like, and that's, again, it's all my decision. And I signed the papers. I agreed to take on the debt. I had it explained to by my banker. Like, I knew the risks going into it. I just, you know, Yeah, you feel this feeling when it sinks in, and you're like, I wish someone told me this earlier. And that's the thing, is you start realizing people have told you it, you just weren't, that you weren't listening.
Yeah.
Because it's a minority right now, culturally, and just across the country, it's kind of a minority to say don't go to college. As much as that's like the cool, edgy thing to say. Oh, it's
going to go into a majority.
And that's what I'm saying, is it, like I said, the sentiment's going to change from, I'm the first person in my family to go to college, to be, I'm the first person who didn't take on this debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that person has so much more freedom, and now we have so much more outlets to make money, as we'll get to in our next chapter, which we probably should pivot to soon.
Yeah,
we can
change that.
Speaking of money and graduation, all of this could have been manageable if someone told us how to flip.
Yeah.
And
the flip life.
We talked about this briefly on the last episode, but Eddie and I, more Eddie than myself, but to his credit, are very much into flipping things for money on the internet, eBay specifically. But I've been doing my research into Marshall Shoup flipping on Amazon.
And
that? When he's talking about retail arbitrage and going to Amazon, or going to Marshall's and buying up like sneakers off the shelf.
Oh.
And then selling them on Amazon.
Yep.
It's a weird niche, but it's, you see YouTube people making a couple grand.
Well, so,
but you have to do your research. You have to be like boots on the ground kind of research.
You would have an easier time, say, okay, so you're talking about Marshalls. I used to work at TJ Maxx. So TJ Maxx, the bigger stores have a section called the runway section. And so the runway section are like well-known brand name items that are high priced but still heavily discounted. Because, you know, they're in TJ Maxx. I don't know if Marshalls have the runway, but...
It's owned by the same company.
Yeah, they're all owned under TJX. So Marshalls, TJ Maxx, and Home Goods, they all run into the same thing. I do know... This is actually can go in. I'm not going to go off on a super tangent. But anyways, I used to remember when I worked there... one of the highest shrink, aka where people stole from the most, would be runway, because they're high ticket items.
Is that what you call it? Is that the in baseball term of that shrink? Is that where you lose your money from theft?
Yeah. So, well, shrink is kind of more of a blanket term, because it can also involve like damaged goods, internal theft, things that just aren't.
Is
just
that never common?
Yeah, oh my god, dude.
Whoa.
That was super common at TJ Maxx. People fucking...
Shit, don't name drop again. Fuck, we're just about to get, like, cease and desist all talk of...
Okay, well, in any company that you work in, there's always going to be some form of internal theft, because it's just what... That's what happens.
Yeah, and no, I was kind of joking, but also not. I was just like, yeah. Nobody listens to this anyways.
But yeah, but not to go into a huge tangent. But anyways, but for, like, those people, right? The people who steal, there's actually a group of people, like this like secret like underground guerrilla coalition.
Jesus. They got robes and shit.
Yeah.
Illuminati
they,
type shit.
They would steal our product, and then they would return them at our store to get the gift cards, because if you return something without a receipt, you would get compensated with a gift card. But then they would use that
the gift card to flip with product.
They would just sell the gift cards at a discounted rate, and then just pocket that profit.
That's a little bit more sketch, though. You can see through it. But if you come back with a gift card and you buy like product, and then you flip that product for like 500% profit,
mm-hmm.
because the retail arbitrage I'm talking about is this guy. I mean, there's other apps you can do this, but this guy was using an app where he would scan it and it would give you a grade pretty much on what consumers are willing to pay, pretty much accelerating the process of flipping through sold on eBay, mm-hmm. but this is through Amazon specifically.
Oh, okay.
And it gives you the FBA, I think it's like something. I did cursory research on this because I haven't been into this market before.
Yeah.
But basically you see if a shoe is viable. It's almost like Pokemon. Like you're scanning through the Pokedex of like, is this Reebok new, is this, you know, Nike Free Run 2017 Flyknit, whatever the fuck, is this going to be a viable product to flip? Is it going to return the profit that I would like to? And so it gives you a more accurate readout than just visually looking through sold on eBay.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you're buying new product and you're scanning it and you can see the retail price and everything, but this gives you a more detailed list of like what customers have historically paid for it, how quickly they sell, what sizes are more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for across the board. But this is the retail arbitrage Gary Vee was talking about, not garage sale flipping, but like buying actual product like from the dollar store. Like when he was talking about buying stuff from the dollar store and selling it for $9, he wasn't kidding. But like it's because he knew where to look. And so that's what this app helps you do. I don't remember the name of it. And it's a paid subscription. Like you have to subscribe to this app because you're paying into like the groupthink of this entire network that basically does the research for you.
Yeah.
So if you know what you're doing, like he goes to the Marshalls with his daughter and pays like $1,500 for shoes. And he has to like walk away with like 3 carts or whatever. But then he shows at the end he made like $4,000 profit. Okay. Not $4,000 from all the thing, $4,000 profit. So after everything was sold and said and done, fees and whatever.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that's not bad.
Yeah. But that's the thing is you have to know
you really do have
what
to
you're
know.
Doing. And he also went to a bigger store. One of those suburban ones that's in a plaza.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to this corner one where we have like super maybe... stores. Exactly. As opposed to the ones we have here, which is like maybe... Maybe like a eighth of a floor room, like showroom on the bottom floor of shoes.
So talking about that too, so the clothing arbitrage... I remember, so I worked at H&M as well, and so every year they would do a 1 day, like special limited edition designer, collaboration with like a really big fashion designer. One of the years was Alexander Wang, and that was huge. And the people who would just buy something just to flip it was intense.
It was like supreme light.
Dude, it would... People would line up. It'd be almost at the same level of having a Black Friday sale. People would line up on the store before it opened, wait hours, and then just storm into the store, just buy, grab whatever they can. Hope to God, if you're buying for yourself, to grab the right size or right item.
You just blindly grab and you hope that, yeah, you come home and you're like, okay, cool, I got it. There's my size.
Again, these are high ticket items, so they're hundreds of dollars.
Wow. And they're just blindly grabbing bundles. Yeah.
Dude, I wish I did this because there was an Alexander Wang purse that was discounted down from $750 to $250.
$250?
Yeah, and then we...
Jesus Christmas. Still, at H&M?
Yeah, and we could still use our
discount on top of that.
Yeah, but then there was another big loophole with it. So if you ever go to H&M, they have these things called ICO discounts. And if you donate clothes, then they'll give you a 10% discount. So we got...
Any amount of clothes?
And you can literally... I've literally seen people take their shirt off, put it in a bag, give it to me, and then we give them the ICO. Shit. I shit you not, we've done that before.
That's hilarious. I mean, great incentive.
It is. And what we would do is our discount was 25%. We use that discount first. Or actually, it would go the other way. So we would use the ICO discount, which is 10%, and then we would add in our 25%, which are two... So in retrospect, you get like 32% off in total. But still, I could have gotten that bag already discounted at $250 with another around 30% off, and then flipped it back for $750. But I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
So thing, if only I knew.
Gotta learn bags. But yeah, my point of bringing this all up during this is from retrospect of us trying to pursue careers. And obviously, it's not just about the money. You know, we're advancing ourselves, trying to get into a career path where we can actually enjoy the work that we're doing. Me, I thought I was going to enjoy being a therapist, but luckily, my school had a comm program. I was already learning stuff on the side, pursued communications, and then my school got bought up by a giant university with a far superior communications. But in between... Money is always a struggle. Money is always a problem. And our recent following of Gary Vaynerchuk, we've realized making money is a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Let me rephrase. There is money available to be had for those who are willing to work for it. Because making money is not easy. You know, you don't just get handed money. but it's there's so much money just floating out there in the ether that no one's willing to grab because they're like, why am I gonna go to the dollar store and like, you know, spend $100 on like small shit that I can just flip for like maybe 50% profit? It's like, because then that's 50% more profit in your pocket for time spent that you would have otherwise been paid minimum wage or sitting at home watching Netflix. Mm-hmm. And there's always that, like, there's always that thing of like, well, what if I'm wasting my time and I don't make a profit? It's like, well, then now you have a learning experience.
Exactly.
Like, very embarrassing. I don't know if I told this on the pod, but those Pez.
Oh, yeah. You bought $200. Wait, no.
$80 worth of Pez.
Yep.
About 80 of them total. And I probably made back $20.
Did you really? Oh, so you were able to sell some?
So, I cataloged 75% of them individually. Mm-hmm. And I grouped together some of them. I ended up, I was so mad that I missed the mark on it that I ended up throwing away.
Oh, did you?
I know that's really mean and that's really bad and I could have given away as gifts to like kids and whatever, but it's like, I was so frustrated that I failed that I threw it away. But what could I expect? I'd never sold Pez before, Pez dispensers, mm-hmm. but it was a learning experience.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can imagine. When Gary Vaynerchuk on his show Trash Talk, which we both watch, we both love, where he goes garage sailing and he haggles people down and he knows certain things when he talks about plush animals, he's like, oh my God, this Mickey Mouse, you wouldn't believe like how much this is gonna flip for. He's like, so he goes after these things you wouldn't think to, like, right? If you're a novice garage sailor and you just heard about people making money, when you go to garage sales, you're gonna look after coins, you're gonna look after like, I don't know, patches, something, some collectible stuff, like, but what he goes after is like contemporary plush toys, you know, like,
and not even that,
yeah, like Paw Patrol Lego, like Lego sets that are from this decade, yeah. Or like Paw Patrol, like not all this stuff has to be vintage, like not everything's a collector's item, and that's very dodgy. But my point is, he's done his research, market research through experience, and he knows what sells. And so I would have known that not all Pez are created equal. They don't all sell, you know, just because it looks old does not mean it's gonna sell. Mm-hmm. What one of the ones that sold really well was a yellow stemmed no foot Mowgli Yugoslavia 1972, which all of those things that I just listed, I learned why they were important and how important they were and how much money they can recount, like pull back, how much money they can make back by trying to sell 80 of them. So I failed and I was $80 in the hole, well, I guess 60. But what I got from that was knowledge that I can now take into future garage sales. And if I see one that's really pricey, then I only have to pay 60 cents on it and flip it for $5. So it's going to save me so much money in the long run. I was overambitious. I was overzealous. And I wanted to look at the stuff in private and catalog them in private without like leading this woman on to how much money I could make off of her. And then turns out she made more money off me. But whatever. She was throwing it away. But the year, the country that it was made in, the fact that Yugoslavia doesn't exist anymore, the no feet on a Pez dispenser, pro tip, little bullet point, if you're looking for Pez that are valuable, look for ones that don't have little round feet at the bottom of the stems. Those are more expensive. I don't know why, but that's just that category of something that's rare. But yeah, flipping is something that Eddie and I recently got into big time. Eddie more than I myself, and I'm very impressed with his ability to find stuff and flip. And it's a good way to make income.
I don't know, man. I just stumble upon this shit because, I mean, right now I'm starting to build more traction, especially with the jersey that I have. It's more serendipitous because I have a Red Sox jersey, which is authentic, and since the Red Sox won the World Series, it's kind of seen right now in the market as high ticket item. So that's going through bidding right now, which, yeah, is going pretty well. But now I'm having more luck because I'm learning more about, okay, what's selling, how often it's being bought by other people, by how much, and, you know, is it something along that line that people are buying but not everybody has? So, you know, I just sold a tumbler that it sells really well in the market, but I haven't seen that specific tumbler be sold,
yeah,
along that line. But I was able to sell it, and it had a really good price, too. So that's one thing. But it's also just learning, really learning about what you have. Because, I mean, I found that really crazy, again, serendipitous, when I found that box of stuff that a person just left out and just was giving it away for free. I found that Shift runner that like tracks all of your running stats and how you can run better. That thing is retailed at $200, but when I looked on eBay, nobody's buying that at all, and the reviews for it on the market are actually pretty bad. People say it's not as good as a to record data as it claims to be. So in the runner community, everybody knows that it's not a reliable, you know, piece of technology to use, so nobody's gonna buy it, let alone try to flip it. You know, I can try to make a small profit off of it, but you know, is it worth it? Especially if I have to constantly repost it on Amazon and have to keep paying the Amazon, not Amazon, eBay, and keep paying the eBay fees for having my stuff listed and whatnot. Because that's another thing, you know, yes, you can make money off flipping, but you can feel really defeated really fast if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, and fees will catch up with you on your invoice.
It really will.
On your monthly invoice.
They're $6 here and there, but luckily that's all I've accumulated on my fees is $6 a month.
My first month's invoice was $60.
$60? Holy shit, I haven't gotten that far.
Because I made $600 worth of profit.
Oh.
Because they go final listing fee as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, remind you, they take a percentage of your profit as well as a listing fee.
Yeah.
So the more money you make, the more money they take from you. $60, that was nothing. It's just because it was all at once. They didn't just shave it off the price.
Mm-hmm.
They shaved it off the price, but then, or they give you the money, but then they ask for it back with the invoice, which I think is kind of an antiquated thing. I want to not see the money go away. I want it to be like my taxes. I want it to come out of my paycheck, and the number that I look at is the number I get.
Yeah. Definitely.
Unfortunately, I'm sure there's some reason why their system is set up this way. You have to pay an invoice like it's 1972. At the end of a month, there's an invoice that you get and says, okay, well, you owe this much for fees. And they make it super weird and in all red text. And it's okay, I get it. I'm going to pay. Yeah. Trust me. You know, now that I have my PayPal set up, I just kind of send it through there and I don't have to think about it. Do you want to set up auto payments? No, I don't. Because I already set up auto stuff before and that fucked me over. Folks, call into eBay and make sure you set it up so that they don't auto-relist your things. Because even when you check off, don't relist for smart pricing, they will keep relisting your things. That's the one thing I don't. It's kind of a grapple with them, but
yeah.
they'll give in once you know all the right settings. Yeah. That was a hassle, but whatever.
But I guess, so for me right now, in my experiences, since I understand what's hot to get and what's not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm able to sell a little bit more, a little bit better, and at smarter prices. I know which items are good for bids versus buy now prices, which is really important, because at the beginning when I first started, I put everything under auction bidding, and yeah, that can get you some good actual, you know, good value price pieces, so you don't lowball yourself and mark something for a really low price when in reality you should have been selling at this price. But yeah, it's just right now I'm still in the learning phases.
Now is good enticing.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's all in the psychology of the sell, you know, which has been used in physical sales before. It's if you have a buy now price that's only maybe 40% more than your current auction, but the buyers see that there's six watchers, they might get anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And they might say, well, I really want this, I don't want to pay so much, but, and then they have to make the decision in their head, is the risk of losing it to all these people worth it? Should I just do the buy now? And then a lot of the times they'll just jump on the buy now. So you want to make the buy now low enough to entice, but not so low that you're not also making a good profit that you might otherwise make from auction.
Yeah.
And that's how I've won some stuff over, because on my ukulele, I had four or five watchers at one point. It was coming down to a day and the auction was only at 80, but my buy now was from 125 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, actually 140, and someone bought it. Did a buy now, because they're I don't even want to deal with this auction, because I don't know how, who's going to get what, and who's going to end up on top.
Fucking
if my internet's going to be fast enough to do the little back and forth snipe war at the last 30 seconds. So, yeah, I mean, it's all about research. It's all about failing. But in order to research, you can't just Google it, because everyone's trying to sell you a book about how to sell stuff on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, the only advice that you need to know technically is what Gary Vee talks about. Look up things that you're trying to sell, sort by sold, and make your own decision from that point on.
Yeah. Well, the one thing the two easiest things you want to look immediately to see whether or not something that you're thinking of selling is going to sell is the date and how much they sold it for.
Yeah.
And it sometimes can range pretty wide, but usually I try to look for a common number. Mm-hmm. So for my CSI DVD box set, season one, I was going through that, and that one had there is actually selling pretty often. People are actually buying these, crazy. People are buying CSI, you know, box sets at a pretty often rate in the eBay world. But the thing is they're not all season one box sets. They're either like complete seasons 1 through 9, or they have season 3, 4, 5, or they're selling just the box set season 6, or there were a couple where I saw is season 1 and 2. And so those I looked a little bit more closely because I was like, all right, that's the closest thing I can find right now to an actual season 1 box set that I can probably guesstimate a proper value for it. So right now I set it at a buy now price of $20, but they can do an offer of 10. And again, I found this CSI box set DVD set season 1 outside. So whatever I make on it is pure profit. I can sell that thing for $1 and I make a profit.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's something people need to realize too, is say you go to a garage sale and get a pottery piece that's $1, but you flip it for $5. You just made $4.
It's still profit. And the thing is, too, sitting around twiddling your thumbs trying to decide whether you should buy something or not when you know there's a profit, no matter how little, is time you're wasting, and you're diluting the value of the product you're buying. Because if you're trying to measure your time, like, well, if I work this many hours at, you know, why would I go out? Why would I take a day off of work where I know I'm going to get money and risk going out trying to find these gems and like getting paid? It's like, because if you set yourself up to know that you're going to hit 3 garage sales, you know you're going to find something. And worst comes to worst, it's a day off for yourself to like do other things, but you still have the chance of you. When you do your research and you like know that there's going to be certain things, whether it's like a church sale versus an estate sale versus just a kid's yard sale, like, you know, kids are growing out of certain toys and so they're selling off their like Lego sets and they're trading it up for, you know, guitars or whatever. You know what I mean? Like doing your research, understanding that like when you have market knowledge in the back of your head and you don't have to keep looking things up and you can start making quicker decisions, you start to make more and more money because you spend less time second-guessing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then buy the things that, you know you're going to be able to flip. But it's surprising when you do the calculations in your head, oh, only spent like 2 hours going around to different garage sales and I made, at the end of the day, like, you know, I don't know, $200 or like, yeah, you know, like you have or whatever.
Yeah. Just to make it simple for people. Okay. Look, if you're looking to flip or start flipping, this is, I think from what I've experienced so far, this is the best way I would go about it. The first thing I would do is kind of to have a test ground. Find shit in your house that you never use.
For sure.
Clothes, you know, furniture pieces, if you're looking to declutter, before you think about donating or just throwing it out, think about whether or not you can sell it and just try to sell those items first.
Yeah.
Because you're just starting easy.
Yeah.
Right? There's not a lot, there's nothing to lose if you can't sell something you already own. Then from there, after you get through that initial phase, what I would start doing is, if you don't live in an area that has a lot of, like me and Gage, we're really lucky. We live in Boston, so we're kind of just in this community of where people just kind of throw shit away.
You're pretty lucky. I got to make a trip out here.
Dude, I can't tell you, well, like with All Saint Christmas and just when people just leave things out in the street.
All Saint Christmas, that's
prime time in terms of finding items. But we also have Goodwills and a lot of TJ Maxx's. Mm-hmm. I know some people, like in Connecticut, there are Savers that you can
go to. I'm going to Savers over Thanksgiving. I'm probably going to buy more stuff than I can bring back. But
yeah.
Because I go with my grandma all the time. She gets the senior discount too.
Ooh.
So slide in with that, you know, 65 plus discount to further my profit margin.
But yeah. So yeah, that's how I would start off. I would start off by trying to sell the stuff that's in your home. As a testing ground to see where you are and how much you have to learn.
For sure.
Then from there, I would do things like set up an eBay account, set up a PayPal account. I would get a PayPal Visa card, and I'll get into that a little bit more in just a second. And I would do not just eBay, but I would do Facebook Market and...
Let Go,
that's another big one. Those two are other selling apps that you can use to sell or flip things.
Yeah, Let Go and Facebook Marketplace are really good for things that you might not necessarily A, want to ship, or B, can't ship. If it's, I have a mannequin, like a torso mannequin, and if I found someone who might want to buy that, I would have to walk it to them, like meet them somewhere, because like...
Or they come to you and pick it up.
Yeah, precisely. Like, I can't put it in a box. This is, first of all, too heavy. The shipping price is going to be too outlandish to be worth buying. But, you know, if someone local wants a mannequin, they got a mannequin. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Think about that for, like, local purchases.
Yeah. Oh, it's the Facebook Market in terms of furniture. I always look through the furniture section because I like to, for reupholstery, I like to find stuff that's either free or dumb cheap, which are a bunch of. And I always bookmark them for myself for future to see whether or not they're still available if I want to get them. But yeah, I would start there. And then after a while, if you know, depending on where you live, if you live in the suburbs, I know you can go to a lot of garage sales. Mm-hmm. I would start doing that. I would start getting items that are, you know, that are identifiably easy to sell. I think that sounds stuffed a little animals. Vague. Yeah, stuffed animals.
Lego sets.
Anything hard, like really well known in terms of brand name.
Kids' toys.
Yeah, kids' toys.
Surprisingly high margin.
Yeah. I would start looking at those first, and then as time goes on, you'll start to understand and be able to identify more niche collectible items.
What companies sell better?
Yeah.
What cartoon, like, what brands, you know, does, like, Aquanauts or Paw Patrol sell better, you know?
Yeah. And it's just really doing research, and just understanding how the market works in terms of what's selling, what's not. And then from there, going into the PayPal. So one thing is, in terms of eBay and how they work, they really kind of just stress on using PayPal as a form of getting payment, receiving payment, when you sell things or buy things on eBay. So I would definitely use PayPal. And the reason why I'm getting, I have a PayPal Visa card. I use that PayPal Visa card strictly for my shipping costs, because when you ship things on eBay, you have to ship things out of pocket at first, because you're getting that income in from selling something.
I didn't do mine. You can choose whether they pay for shipping or
whatever. Yeah, but the thing is that the money that you get, it also includes that shipping, but you don't have that access to the money right away.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Sorry. I was wrong. You're right. Ultimately, you do pay for shipping. Like, you pay for shipping up front, but whether it's a part of the price that you
get compensated for it afterwards.
Yeah, you have to wait 21 days, which...
Yeah, I fucking hate that.
Huge disclaimer. If they pay with credit card or debit card and not PayPal, eBay reserves the right to reserve your money for 21 days. They will hold your money for 3 weeks before they give it to you through PayPal. They only give you the money through PayPal. But if someone pays through PayPal, you get the money immediately.
Yeah.
But if it's a PayPal transfer, it's secured, so your money goes through immediately and you have access to those funds immediately.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's just one of those things where it's more security that you're going into.
Yeah.
Sorry, Clovey, in the way.
So you're saying PayPal credit card for
shipping? Yeah, PayPal credit card for shipping. Because after a while, it just becomes easier to divide your money. So, you know, okay, this was this X amount for shipping. It stays in my PayPal account, and then I get to transfer the actual profits into my regular bank account. So now I'll always have that shipping money in PayPal where I can just use it strictly there, and then everything else is just, you know, just for me.
Yeah.
And then lastly is patience.
Yeah.
Things are not going to sell like right away.
In order to lower your fees, you have to go through a lot of hoops. Do the research, because this is going to be dated by the time this goes up. By the time you hear this, I'm sure they've changed the hoops to be bigger or smaller accordingly. But it's not as easy as it seems. Do your research onto what fees you're going to be paying, and understand that you're going to be paying upfront to get the money later. Mm-hmm. But you have to, that's kind of what fuels the motivation to do better research.
And I feel like that's one of those things is, it going to a more broader sense, it's like, you know when you hear things about just any subjects for, you know, why isn't everybody doing this right now?
Yeah.
And it's like for flipping, you know, just keep it simple so I'm not babbling. So, you know, me and Gage, we're learning how to flip, and we're flipping right now. And it's one of those things is like, well, if it's so easy, or if it sounds so easy, why isn't everybody doing this? It's because, you know, what me and Gage are going through with the fees, and some of the things that we've tried to sell have not sold.
Some hidden features that need to, like, some serious customer service calls to get undone.
Yeah, these are big hurdles, or even small hurdles for some people to get through in order to do this for the long run, yeah. For the long term.
Because the longer you sell on there, the more premium of a seller you become. And that's just the same with anything. I mean, if you look at it just black and white, you're exploiting them for their platform.
Yeah.
And they demand a certain cost kickback in return. And it's a risk. They're taking you on as a seller. You're hawking your wares on their platform. So you're going to pay the price for the risk that you're ensuing by just throwing around product and collecting money. Because you're making money. You're making a profit off their back. So I understand where they're coming from. I wish there was more transparent with that, but then I guess they would make so much money because it would scare people away.
Exactly.
For certain things. But like, you know, auto relisting and stuff, you know, I had to call because I couldn't find a feature on there. All their settings were cryptic and stuff. So just do your research before you get started. And just like college, you know, ask yourself, like, are you willing to take on this risk? You know, eBay, obviously this is making it sound dire, but eBay is so much lower. Like, just follow what Eddie said and you'll be golden. Make sure you have a stock of things to sell.
Yeah, there. One last thing, too, is when you ship items, I would definitely invest. And it might sound like, oh, what? This is just another big expenditure to, you know, take on. But it really isn't. Invest in your own shipping supplies. Because I just sent something that somebody bought from my eBay, and I broke even because I had to pay for the packaging box that I had to send it
in. Yeah, man, that sucks when you have to go to CVS or something to get like a shipping box that's way too big for no reason.
Yeah, I just bought 200 shipping bags for $13. I did the math. There's 6 cents a shipping bag.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather pay that than pay $1.79 at the post office to ship something on top of the shipping fee.
I got really lucky because BU, I started flipping when we moved in for school. So I would just get boxes that people were throwing away and use those to ship. Okay. And they were throwing away a bunch of uniquely shaped boxes, which was super helpful. They literally dedicated parking spaces just to throw away cardboard. And I would go by on my way back from work at like 10 o'clock at night, and I'd look like a bum just sifting through like boxes like, this will be a good shape. Like, this will fit a camera. This will fit a camera lens. This will fit a guitar, you know? And then I used recycled newspaper to package it and make sure everything was nice and soft and cushioned. But
yeah.
So there is money out there is what this whole point of the segment was.
You just gotta work for it.
You have to work for it. You have to look for it. Research. Don't just sit around wondering why you don't have money. Go out and figure out how you can make money, because it's out there.
Yeah.
The truth is out there. All right. Hard pivot, no segue into, I guess we spent a lot of time on that one. Let's move past the kids thing then. We're going to talk about milestones of life, but we talked about different milestones, especially with graduation. Kind of redundant. Humbling experiences. I guess it is kind of a segue, because it's humbling to think, oh, I can make all this easy money on eBay, and then getting hit with this your invoice at the end of the month, like, oh, that's how much it cost me to sell all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I recently had a class. I'm studying film and television, obviously, as I've said before, and I wrote a screenplay for a short that we don't have to produce, but we had to create the script. And I read it out in class, And I was so excited to share this story. I thought it was so cool. It had to do with witches and cross-cutting between contemporary Boston and, like, colonial Boston during the witch trials. And I thought it was such hot shit because I wrote it all alone in my room. And then people started reading it aloud as the characters. And then I had to shut up. Like, our teacher doesn't allow us to talk. The people who create cannot talk until the very end. And even then, he cuts us off. And so everyone had to ask questions at the end. And he would ask, so what's the story about? So what happened? And people were scratching their head, confused about a lot of stuff. They're like, the dog was important, but I don't understand why the dog was important. And in the back of my head, I'm like, the dog's not important. It's just a vehicle for the plot. And then I was, like, answering my own questions. So that was a very humbling, very humbling experience for me, because it really knocks you down. No matter how good you think you are at something, it knocks you down so many pegs to think about all the things you never thought about and how reliant you are on other people consuming, at least for my career path in media and film and television, people consuming your product. And no matter how cool and awesome you think it is and how much thought and detail you put into it, at the end of the day, if people don't know what the fuck is going on, it's worthless.
You starting that story about you in class reminds me of that scene in SpongeBob when Squidward, is that episode when SpongeBob is trying to, like, have Squidward try a Krabby Patty, and Squidward, like, takes a smiggit of a bite, and he starts off, like, really good. He's like, well, this Krabby Patty, and then you see SpongeBob's expression, and he's, like, happy as all shit, and he's like, is the worst Krabby Patty I've ever tasted. Oh, shit, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Let people play.
Fucking smashes it, and then SpongeBob's eyes go, like, do the fucking nuclear bomb.
Yeah. It's exactly like it. Or, I mean, for maybe more of the grown-ups, the Hell's Kitchen, any Hell's Kitchen where it's like, this risotto is absolutely amazing example of garbage. And then they just, like, he, like, takes you on this roller coaster of emotion of, like, what you think it is. But yeah, it was like, it really knocks you down a peg, and it makes you work harder for the reward of people. Even people just saying out loud your plot back to you is, it feels so good. Like, I revised my first script, and it was pretty humbling the first time, because they're like, well, what's this, that, the other thing. The other first time wasn't that bad because it was only 10 pages, so there wasn't as much room to fuck up. Plus, he gave us restrictions, so I wasn't able to go balls to the wall insanity. This one, it was no limits except for 20 pages. The first one I rewrote, and I got feedback from him, and I grossly improved compared to my first draft, and that improvement felt really good because I took the criticism and I actually built off of it and made something amazing comparatively, and I felt really proud of my second product. I felt proud of the first one, then I felt torn down, and then I felt even more proud than I ever did ever about the second one. So I hope that the second draft of this second script will feel even better because I'm taking in, but I have a lot more groundwork to do because I have to pick up a lot more pieces that I created for myself. But I feel like I never had as much of that in my younger life. I feel like I was shielded from a lot of embarrassing experiences where there was direct criticism at you. Because I feel like a lot of people try to shield you from that with the, oh, it was great, but, you know, maybe just work on this. But, you know, it was fantastic. It was like a cathartic experience to get torn down, because it's like, I know I can build myself up from this, and it's going to feel so much more rewarding when I show another script that's like 10 times better than what I thought I could have started with the first one. And that is much more rewarding than people just patting you on the back like, well, you tried your best. Like, I know I'm trying my best, but I want to be better. I want the best to be better. So it's like, you know.
I think that's just something you're never going to really avoid. There are always going to be people who want to look out for your best interest and try to coddle you and make sure you're okay. And be like, yeah, you're good. Don't worry about it. Like, yeah, you know, maybe people don't think you're that good, but I always think you're that good. Kind of the mom.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. He was like, you're always the cutest to me, son.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you understand how cute my mom says I am, kind of thing. But yeah, dude. That's the thing, not with me, but, you know, in competitive sports you know, for me, I box. Not at a competitive level, but, you know, as a form to just to learn how to fight. And then on top of that, to just exercise in general. And boxing is such an interesting sport, let alone a way to learn a new form of fighting because it's really ground rooted in American history. You know, the tales of boxing and, you know, how a lot of it, I know you researched this or seen this through other people's podcasts, but boxing has always been an outlet for the lower classes as a way of kind of representing their community. So, you know, it's been through with the Jewish people. They've had their, you know, famous boxers. Italians have done it. Russians, the black community have, you know, their famous line of boxing superstars. But not to get super out of in tangent with it. But yeah, but there is, boxing is also super humbling because I've seen a lot of macho guys come into the gym, be like, oh yeah, I can fucking whoop somebody's ass. And then they get into the ring with somebody and then they get their ass handed. And then sometimes that really cripples some people's confidence and their egos, and you never see them again at the gym. And then sometimes they come back and they be like, and they're like, you know, I don't know enough. So what am I doing wrong that I can improve on so I could be a better boxer or be better at, you know, just not sucking, I guess, which is a lack of a better word. But yeah, just this past week, there was this new kid who came into our gym and he's just learning how to box. And he's from like a rough area of Boston. I forgot where exactly he's from, but is one of the more, you know, impoverished, lower class surrounding cities. And so he wants to learn how to box. And I guess he was telling me he has some big plans with it. So I was like, and I saw him sparring and I asked him if he wanted to do a couple more rounds with me. And so he was like, yeah. And we did like about four rounds and he was good, but he lacked in a lot of areas. And, you know, this is not me trying to showboat and say how good I am, but in terms of experience, I knew more than he did. So I was able to do certain things that he couldn't do inside the ring. And so that really humbled him because obviously he has a lot to learn, and you know, some of the minute things that I was able to do and he tried to replicate, he didn't do it so well because that's the first time he's tried to do them. And it's a really interesting thing when you see people who go in for the first time in our gym, and this is a very specific thing when you see it. When men want to box, they box with a lot of ego. But when women learn how to box, they box with like no ego. They actually box with a lot of technicality and technique with it. Women are way more technical when it comes to boxing. They kind of leave their ego to the side. But men are the opposite. Men, they forget about technique and then just go balls in with their ego and just fucking wail in the bag, or in there in the ring, they'll just fucking try to swing Hail Marys at you. And it's very macho and, you know, just very ego and testosterone driven. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that I like about boxing is it, when you get into the ring with somebody, they will shut you down if you just try to show off. And that's why I like boxing, is because it's just a good way to, you know, get a good workout, but also humble you at the same time.
Yeah. I need more of that. I'm glad I'm discovering how good this feels at a younger age. Because I can see how it sours a lot of people's lives to live in a protected bubble of like, no, I'm good. Like, those guys who leave the gym and never come back. And yeah, they go to another outlet to try to like fuel their ego until they find something that they might be possibly half good at, and they just kind of coast on that and milk it for all of it's worth. Mm-hmm. Like, dude, I'm the fucking best curler this side of the freaking St. Mary's Bridge. Like, you don't even know, dude. I'm throwing rock like you wouldn't believe. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. They're just going to find something to appease themselves, which, you know, good for them. Over-index on the things you're good at. But also, like, if you do want to try something, keep trying until you literally cannot do it anymore. Like, okay, maybe this absolutely isn't meant for me, but don't quit on the first day. And definitely don't go in. Well, I mean, I guess you can't say don't go in with your ego, because you'll always in the back of your head, like, even if you're like focusing on technique, you'd be like, but I'm going to be the best technique ever. So it's like you egotize the technique, you know what yeah. I mean? Like, you just bring that to everything. I guess you just have to get smacked down. At least what I've noticed for a lot of men, that because...
Yeah. I mean, my first experience when... So when I started to take boxing a little bit more seriously and I wanted to start sparring, my first time sparring, it was actually really funny because... I'm waiting, right, for the instructor to be like, okay, you two, you're kind of new, both go in, right? So I see two guys who are new to sparring go in, they do a few rounds, okay, they go out. And then the instructor points to me, he's like, all right, now me and you. I was like, wait, I'm sparring you, the instructor? And so we spar for, I think it was like two rounds, man. And it was hard, dude. That dude, he would just punch me so fast, and I just didn't know what to do and how to react to it. And I'd be like, holy shit, like, this is miles away from what I was doing on the heavy bag versus fighting an actual person who can fucking punch me back. And you want to talk about, like, legitimate humbling? Like, that's really humbling. Because, you know, you can get good on the heavy bag and be like, yeah, like, yeah, my moves are so cool. Like, I can throw a really good jab. My power, like, on my, you know, my power hand is awesome. But when you put those, you know, concepts and theories into the ring, it's a whole different meaning. And so... just sparring that first time with somebody who's like really good, like that instructor I had, was like, holy shit, like I really don't know nothing about boxing right now. And but it's one of those things, you know, I flipped it, and instead of being, you know, down on myself and be like, I'm never gonna spar again, I was like, I'm gonna get good so I can actually have a good sparring match with this instructor instead of getting my ass handed and looking stupid in front of all, you know, in front of everybody in the gym.
Yeah.
So.
But then they're also going to get their asses handed them too. So it's like, I guess that fades away pretty quickly when you realize, like, you know, everyone's still learning. Everyone's going to be at a different level and you can't expect to be where he is. Yeah, it sucks because it's like you want to be so good right off the bat. And I definitely seriously have a problem with that. Like, still from when I was a kid, my dad tried teaching me how to climb a tree, and I couldn't get it at first, and I was fucking, like, rage-filled and in tears, like, I just want to climb this fucking tree! Yeah. And he's like, you gotta be patient, you have to learn. And he's like, don't just fucking give up on it, because you don't know how to do it. And I'm like, God! And then it took me forever, but I finally did it. I, like, got my leg over the branch, and I was able to get up. And he's like, see? So just quit your fucking bitching, and, like, you could have done this the whole time.
You haven't like... seen mid-90s yet.
No.
No. For people who don't know what mid-90s is, a new film by Jonah Hill. If you don't know who Jonah Hill is, he did...
we can't help you.
21 Jump. He was on 20 Jump Street. He was in Superbad. He's Maniac, Superbad. Yeah, so this is his first film, I believe. He's directed, written and directed.
Directorial debut.
Yeah. And there's one scene, I'm not going to spoil it for you, but there's this one scene where it's kind of like that, where somebody's trying to do something over and over and over again, but they just can't get it.
Yeah.
And but then they end up getting it later on.
Yeah, I've gotten better at it, but ultimately I have still a lot of space to grow. I'm just glad I'm doing it when I'm young and not old and bitter and still harping about the days of things I was good at, whatever. But
so, yeah.
It's time to wrap it up. Let's talk about where we are, where we're going. You want to start us off?
Yeah. You know, going on with boxing, next week we have something called a smoker's bout, which is kind of an unofficial boxing match. And I am going to be participating in that. And this is going to be my first smokers that I've done in 2 years. I've done three of them. Well, I've done two. This is going to be my third. And I'm really excited, especially because I'm definitely come back from, you know, from being gone from, you know, going to school. And then when I try to get back, I dislocated my knee. So that took me out for another 3 months. And so I've been training and losing weight and getting back to a level where I feel comfortable to be doing that kind of stuff again. So that's that I'm really excited for. In other news, I haven't been able to work on, like, go to my internship because, you know, my actual job. But I've been doing some personal stuff, and I was thinking of a business plan for hopefully a possible business I want to do in the future with my furniture. Well, I'll go into probably greater depth in a future podcast, but a quick business plan or synopsis of what I want to do is I want to combine the aspect of a furniture studio with a cafe and kind of melding those two worlds together, where, you know, clients could go and see what we're doing at the studio in terms of, you know, building the furniture piece, designing it, you know, seeing all the process and steps to having an actual finished product, and then having a cafe where they can go and relax. But the furniture that's in the cafe was made at the studio, and then those pieces can be sold, or they could, we can change the lineup or the collections that are in the cafe, you know, so they can be with the times and the seasons of the brand. So yeah, that's what I've been doing for the last few weeks. This is kind of really thinking for myself and what I want to do in the future with my actual career.
Yeah, and that sounds something like I would, because I've never seen that before, so I would definitely be interested, heightened interest, mm-hmm. If I was someone who had space for furniture.
Yeah.
Or like a place to live at home, for sure would be interested. So yeah, we're probably gonna hopefully do a post-game podcast with Eddie after his match. It'd be great. Talking nice and slow.
All that CTE.
Yeah. Jeez. For me, simple. I have a film shoot next week. A independent film of a friend of a friend is doing, and it seems very legit. We're gonna be there up in Lake George all week. We have a cabin.
Cabin in the woods.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Give me some time away from classes. I'm skipping classes, and I'm asking for time off of work, but hopefully it'll be some time to get some distance, literally, but then also mentally, and see, you know, get some perspective, maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to be all Walter Throw and meditate in the woods for no fucking reason. But, yeah, I'm excited. This first, like, real set I'm going to be on, and it's another project I get to add to my list and hopefully help me get a better internship. And now I'm tired. We're recording a lot later than usual, so we're just going to wrap this up. We will recap you guys on the next one about all the match and the film shoot, and hopefully we didn't die and Eddie didn't like $1 million baby himself.
Yeah, oh my god. Yeah, please, no stools in the bar. In the boxing ring, please.
Alrighty. And this is Gage signing off.
This is Eddie signing off.
Alright, have a good one, guys.
Signing off, say goodbye.
Doesn't make any noise. Alright, bye guys. Mm-hmm.